Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, the always natty, Dr. Rick Hess.
I like the natty. Natty works.
You look natty today, Rick.
Natty Bo, baby. Identify?
Natty Bo. I don't know. Who is Natty Bo?
National Bohemian, one of the cheap brands of beer that predominates on the East Coast in the summertime.
I see. Very nice. Very nice. Well, Rick, did you happen to see Fordham's latest report this week?
It's hard to miss it with y'all's press operation.
Well, that's right. Well, what we found out was that states are not doing a very good job teaching world history. In fact, 33 states received a D or an F. So you got to wonder, with the World Cup starting tomorrow, how on earth American students are going to watch these matches with any sense of comprehension.
I think that's fair. I remember when I would pretest my ninth graders in geography, beginning of the school year, ask them, what's this country just the south of the U.S.? Two-thirds of them would guess France or China or Africa. They didn't know. We don't teach them any of this stuff. So I think it's good that you guys called them on it.
They really guessed Africa?
Oh, yeah. I especially liked it when they guessed that England was Africa.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. Well, if you're a new listener and you know where Africa is and England, too, let me tell you how the show works. Rick and I will start with a game of Pardon the Gadfly, where we show off our formidable vocabularies while debating the education news of the week. And, Rick, we're going to try something new this week. We're going to do 90-second speed rounds.
I like the challenge.
You like the challenge. All right, that means we have to be precise and convincing. All right, then we've got a quick interview, and then finally everyone's favorite cordial education news of the weird. All right, so let's dive right in. Rick, what's our first topic?
All right, Mike, big education news this week was that the Supreme Court agreed to hear arguments over the extent to which public schools can use race in deciding school assignments. Is it time to erase race as a factor in public school choice programs?
Well, yes, I think that it is. And, you know, the whole legal world is really excited to get to find out, you know, what Chief Justice Roberts and what Samuel Alito think about affirmative action. Whatever you think about the constitutional arguments, I think as a matter of education policy, we would simply be better served focusing on achievement rather than trying to worry about the racial composition of the schools. I mean, especially in a lot of these big cities where, frankly, there's hardly any white students left in the schools. And this, you know, the districts are making all kinds of effort to try to still integrate the schools when they maybe would be better off focusing on math and reading.
Now, Mike, you've defended efforts to categorize kids by race when it comes to No Child Left Behind. Why is it okay to bean count Black and Latino children as separate categories when we're talking about accountability, and then not to use it for purposes of ensuring we've got heterogeneous schools?
Right. I think these are two totally different issues, Rick. I mean, under No Child Left Behind, the reason that we need to make sure schools are getting good results for Black students and Hispanic students is because if we only look at average test scores, then we are hiding, masking this achievement gap that's underneath it. So you've got especially suburban schools that claim they have high average test scores, and they might, but you find out that, well, that's because, you know, all of your white students are doing well, and the 10% of your student population that's Black is bombing the test.
Sure,
and that's not good enough.
But if the concerns that treating kids not as Americans, but as members of a race is a problem when it comes to school assignment, why isn't that a problem across the board?
All right. Whew, that is a fast speed round. What
I
do you
like
think?
Huh? I like that. I like the gun.
All right. Very good. Well, we are now on to our next topic, universal preschool. California voters told Meatloaf to eat crow and take his proposition and stuff it.
I think you mean Meathead there, Bip.
I do mean Meathead, don't I?
Yes, you do.
The Meatloaf is a really bad 70s singer,
really,
isn't he?
Really good. Bad out of hell. And
that's
bad
right.
Out of hell, too.
Meathead was the one in Archie Bunker, Rob Reiner.
Yeah, baby.
Well, that's good. You know, thankfully, that's not a part of world history, which we're going to talk about a lot today, but really about American history and pop culture.
You were educated in those DNF schools.
I was going to say, oh, my goodness. Okay, Meathead. Very good. Well, by a margin of 60 to 40, California voters said no, no, no to universal pre-K for all four-year-old kiddies. Now, Rick, how do you explain it?
I think it says two things. One, this was going to operate by taxing folks who made more than $400,000 a year to provide schools. Turns out that only about 10% of folks who are going to get served are folks who aren't already paying for private care. Basically, California is going to tax the super rich to provide services to the well-off. Nobody thought this was worth pushing for. Second thing is it was going to involve hiring a bunch of government-assigned teachers to teach pre-K. I don't think anybody in the Sunshine State at the end of the day was real excited about expanding California's education bureaucracy by another 8 or 10%.
Right, because the plan wouldn't have allowed for private pre-K and other church-run programs and things like that to be part of the program. You know, I think it's interesting to put this in context of some of the other proposals and referendum that have also failed in California. You know, a couple times they've put up a school voucher proposal for some kind of universal voucher, and that's been going down.
And actually, by numbers, not dissimilar to this.
That's right. And I think what you find is that, first of all, voters like to say no to these proposals when they don't know much about it. They're naturally skeptical. It's probably a good thing. I also don't think that people like universal anything, right? I mean, it just sounds a little bit fishy. Maybe if they had said, look, we're going to focus this on poor kids. We're going to try to invest what it takes to replicate some of the best pre-K models in the country. Maybe then the voters would have been more supportive of it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a case where people are just skeptical of expanding government provision of service across the board. Why the heck they crafted this thing to call for a state and only state provision of pre-K, I don't think anybody ever quite figured out.
You know, though, I think the real reason that didn't pass is that it didn't have Meatloaf in out front.
If they had him out front, they would have won, baby.
Right.
That's a safe bet.
Okay,
all right. Last but not least, the IB program. Some in Minnesota believe the rigorous international baccalaureate program, known as the IB, is un-American. Mike, has the prevalence of loons in Minnesota turned the population loony?
You know, Rick, I fear that it might have. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. Look, there are valid concerns about the international baccalaureate program. You know, we at the Education Gadfly have expressed some of these concerns that maybe some of the curriculum is a little bit too fuzzy or a little bit too multiculturalist. But come on, this program being un-American because it asks students to learn about the rest of the world, I mean, that's crazy.
Now, that's something. When the folks at the Fordham are attacking folks for being unfair bashers of American education, isn't this a whole new day? Isn't this your niche? Aren't you just jealous that these guys are creeping in on the Fordham Foundation's well-established niche as the people who badmouth American schooling?
Rick, let's be honest here. These are black helicopter types here, right? I mean, we're talking about conspiracy theorists who think that, what, the United Nations is trying to take over our schools and is trying to force our children to become, quote, global citizens. I mean, what does that mean to be a global citizen? Look, I mean, these are not valid concerns. This is just scare tactics, and it's ridiculous.
So you're opposed to global citizenship? Is this the official position of Fordham?
I just don't even know what it means.
Are you in favor of global citizenship?
I don't know what I'm in favor. What's global citizenship?
I don't really know. I got to
admit. That's exactly right. I don't know. I might be in favor of it. I might not be. Do you get benefits? Do you get, you know, I don't know, 2% off all of your purchases when you go visit the Eiffel Tower? I don't know.
I like that.
You like that?
That's a bit of gutsy equivocation there.
That's right. You know, you get into the Taj Mahal for free? I don't know. I mean, what does it mean? That's what it means. Well,
Sue swings a good gong. You got to give her that.
Very nice. Very nice gong. Well, Federico, that is it for Pardon the Gadfly. So you are now out of the second chair because we have an in-studio guest to join us. It is an interview with Fordham's own senior writer and the chief editor of the State of State World History Standards 2006, Martin A. Davis, Jr., to tell us why so many states don't care about Simón Bolívar. Martin A., welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So, Martin A. Davis, Jr., that's an awfully waspy name, isn't it?
Actually, it's Welsh, but you know what, Mike? Given the report's findings, I'm considering changing my name to Martino.
Okay, very good. Well, Martin, this is a devastating report. As I mentioned earlier, two-thirds of the states receive Ds or Fs for their world history standards, meaning they don't even begin to offer teachers, parents, and students clear guidance about what's expected to be learned about the rest of the world. So what's going on? Why are states so afraid to spell out what students should study?
Well, Mike, do you want to face down an angry mob of six descendants of 19th century street vendors from Mexico who want textbooks to write their relatives' contributions into Mexico de F's politics? Of course you don't, and neither do the states. So they either go vague, a.k.a. Alaska, students should know about East-West relationships, or they go kitchen sink, a.k.a. North Dakota, and include every interest group in their standards.
Okay, very good. And North Dakota, I understand, also asks its students to trace their bare feet and then label the result as a continent and make up names like Bunyan Bay on that continent. That's some rigorous education going
high
on there.
High-end critical thinking skills.
Very nice. All right. So most states, it's really all or nothing. It's the kitchen sink or very little detail. Now, one of the interesting things the report found was that as bad as states do covering world history as a whole, they do the worst when it comes to Latin America. Only 9 states even mention Simon Bolivar, who I like to call the George Washington of Latin America. Now, Marty, why are states ignoring the Western Hemisphere?
Well, Mike, because we've been ignoring it since the Monroe Doctrine, but we can't afford to anymore. 2 of the top 4 exporters of oil to the U.S. are Venezuela and Mexico. We're fighting a mega-million-dollar war in South America, drug war. And Hugo Chavez is making Fidel Castro look downright tame these days.
All right. Well, one last question, Marty. In light of upcoming world events, who do you think is going to win the World Cup?
Well, I'm a Brit at heart, so I stand on the Union Jack. But if I have to change my name to Martina, I'll wrap myself in the green and gold of Brazil. After all, history's on its side. You can look it up.
All right. Very good. Martin Davis Jr., thanks for coming in to the show. Very interesting and devastating findings about the teaching of world history. Rick, no more lollygagging. Come on over here and tell me. So what do you take of this? I mean, especially this lack of interest in Latin America.
I think it's a bad thing, baby.
That's it? That's all you got? You think it's a bad thing?
That's a pretty black and white issue, isn't it? We should know about the world. We should be interested. We should study.
Rick, I am disappointed in you, you know? I was expecting much more. All right. Well, thankfully, we are now ready for that little piece of heaven, education news of the weird, with our very special and very weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Now, Liam, frankly, last week, you really struggled. I mean, do you have a story for us today that, I don't know, is actually weird?
Yeah, Mike, I do. It's pretty weird stuff. Lucille Kepin, a high school dropout, finally earned her GED last week. Kepin is 92, and she's also in prison. Kepin landed in the slammer in 2002 after using a .38-caliber handgun to shoot her neighbor, Stephen Flesh, who had apparently stopped paying attention to her. Flesh is a Vietnam veteran. He survived the shooting, but he still has pieces of the bullet inside his body. And while Kepin still thinks her anger was justified, her newfound education has given her a more thoughtful perspective. Kepin reflected on her relationship with Flesh by saying, quote, "I would find a different way of ending it." Recalling the actual crime, she continued, quote, "He just kept walking and walking. Then all of a sudden he got weak, and the Bible flew, and down he went. I said to him, 'I just hope it hurts, because you hurt me so deeply.'" But there's more. Apparently Kepin's favorite school subject is world history, so it's a great thing that she resides in the Shakopee Women's Prison in Minnesota, a state that received an A on the State of State World History Standards 2006 for its top-notch documents. Rick, how can we ensure that all incarcerated seniors have access to such high-quality world history standards?
Now, this is what I'm talking about, Mike. You said too simplistic? I say no. This fine woman blew away her neighbor, shot him, he dropped his Bible. 15 years of exposure to a high-quality history program, and what happens? Not only does she become a citizen of the globe, but she learns to put her actions in context and to feel bad about it. This is what I'm talking about.
You know, Rick, and just imagine what good this would do for young students who haven't even murdered anybody yet. You know, if they, you know, would only get access to these kinds of world history standards, who knows what their future might hold.
Well, there is this teachable moment issue. If you haven't yet killed, if you haven't yet been through these kinds of dramatic moments, the world might not register in the same. And that might say something about international baccalaureate. By exposing children to world efforts to take over, it is maybe a good thing.
All right. Well, thankfully, that is all the time we have for this week. Thank you, Liam, for the news of the weird. It was actually weird this week. That was very good. Very weird. And for Martin A. Davis Jr. for joining us. Don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. You can always send us your thoughts at letters@edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.